following program is suitable for all ages.
Buffoon. A certain magic will always linger with the very name. It speaks of courage and fervor in the world's most brutal game. 55, worn by Doug Buffoon, a Chicago Bear through and through. He demanded excellence of himself and anyone wearing navy blue.
You tell me what's going on. This is moronic. We're going to get our ass whipped all the way down the line. I want somebody to get kicked in the and get out there and play. You're getting paid to play this game. I'm playing right. I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me. You are a professional team. Act like one, for God's sakes.
Football fans, this is Buffoon 55. The John Buffoon Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Buffoon 55, a fast-paced podcast breaking down the monsters of the Midway. Welcome, Bears and Redskins fans. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, John Buffoon, and I'm coming to you live Tuesday night, September 17th, over our MixLR channel. Every week, we take an intense approach at analyzing the Chicago Bears with some in-depth analysis of their upcoming opponent. And here to help with that analysis is Ian Cummings, writer for Fansided's Riggo Rag. He'll join us in just a little bit, but first, I want to welcome my producer and trusty sidekick, Alyssa Barbieri. Alyssa, before we kick it over to you, from what I understand, the finale of Bachelor in Paradise is on as we speak, and you and Aldo, our engineer, are multitasking by watching it, I assume. Are you guys able to do both at the same time?
I think we are, but if you hear any audible gasps, I think that that's going to be an indication that something's happening. But my full attention, okay, half of my attention, no, most of my attention is on Buffoon 55.
Well, that's good to hear since we're live on the air right now. But okay, we'll go with that.
So, John, before we bring Ian in, I want to let our listeners know how our show works. So we begin and end the show with five questions that you have 55 seconds to respond to. That's John's way of dedicating Buffoon 55 to Doug Buffoon, his uncle who played 15 seasons for the Chicago Bears and wore number 55. So, John, let's get the first five in the books, and then we'll bring Ian in.
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Let's go. John, I want you to listen to the radio call from Sunday's thrilling conclusion to the Bears game.
Scales down the ball. O'Donnell to Holt from the right hash. Angle to the left. Good placement. Boot by Eddie Pinheiro. Kick to the uprights. Then the kick is good for the win. Pinheiro with the narrow kick to send Denver down as time expires. Bears 16, Denver 14. They escape with the victory on the road. Rarely done here in Denver in the first 2 weeks of the season. Bears are 1-1. Fade to black.
So I know what my reaction was. I was hiding behind a chair and then all of a sudden jumping up. You'd think that they'd won the Super Bowl, but what was your reaction to Eddie Pinheiro's De Niro kick? And do you think your week one pep talk did the trick? 55 seconds, and they start now.
Oh, that sounded good, didn't it? Now, I know a lot of media personalities tend to be on the egotistical side, but I'm not so far up my own ass that I think that I can take credit for Pinheiro's kick. Honestly, I was so pissed off from the offsides on the extra point and then the Broncos' two-point conversion that it took me a minute to completely transition from rage to euphoria. I know this was only one game and it's early in the season, but didn't it feel like some demons were exercised on Sunday? Eddie drilled that kick, man. It didn't hit the crossbar. It didn't fade left. He drilled it, and he was 3 for 3. I'll be honest, this is highly encouraging. It looks as though the Bears are going to be in a lot of close games this year, if the first two games are any indication. And, you know, I'm not Mike North, but I think taking the under in Bears games is probably a safe bet at this point. But if Eddie Pinheiro is who we hope he is, he's going to be a very valuable asset to this team this season. And unfortunately now, the real pressure's on. Once you show everybody you can do it, everyone will be expecting you to do it. We're in the honeymoon phase, but eventually we got to turn lust into trust here.
Do you think Pinheiro bought himself like a little leeway should he, like, when his first miss inevitably comes? Because, come on, no kicker is perfect, but do you think he bought himself a little leeway there?
Oh, I think so. I mean, but you, right now you got people, you know, in the streets getting their Panera jerseys, and you know, there's, it's they're going to rename Panera Bread into Panera Bread in Chicago. But I think that eventually, I think Bears fans got to realize eventually he's going to miss a kick, and it's going to be okay. But if he starts missing a chain of kicks, then we start seeing the old trend coming about. So let's enjoy this, but let's not expect perfection.
So your pep talk for Pinheiro worked, but last week's pep talk for Mitch didn't really work. But I'm not blaming you. It's probably because Aldo forgot to post on Twitter, so Trubisky probably didn't hear it. But nonetheless, Trubisky was 16 of 27 for 120 yards. And aside from that final completion to Allen Robinson, he's really not threatening opponents vertically. Many fans are starting to wonder if he's the right guy for the job. What say you? Take 55 seconds.
Listen, I've clearly stated my position on Trubisky many times on the show, and I'll say it again. If you're not getting better, you're getting worse in this league. So far, he's moving backwards this year. I'm not an X and O genius, but I'm watching every snap, and I'm seeing a guy that just isn't getting it right now. I don't know if it's a game day mental thing or what, but I see a guy that's sometimes deadly accurate, and other times you're wondering what the hell he's doing. If you want to bring in the play calling and offensive line, that's fair. Those are fair critiques. But you cannot deny that this kid is playing pretty poorly right now. This is the second year with Nagy, and I said it's okay to hold the quarterback to a higher standard. I know the guys love him, and he has leadership skills, yada, yada, yada. So did General MacArthur. I don't want him throwing footballs out in Soldier Field. I'm not punting on him quite yet, but we always knew this kid was going to be a project. Let's let it play out. But if we're having this same conversation in January, then things are greatly behind schedule. And if things get noticeably worse, then there's a different discussion that needs to be brought up in the offseason. I'm not trying to get that far down the road. I just want to see it play out this year.
Couldn't agree more. We do need to give him a little time, but eventually the excuses do stop. Right. So the Bears were gassed in that fourth quarter on Sunday. So the defense, they looked especially slower to react, and they're mistake prone. But, you know, things can easily be attributed to fatigue. Do you think Matt Nagy made a mistake in not taking the team to the Mile High City a day earlier so that they could acclimate themselves to the altitude? I'm giving you 55 seconds so you don't tire yourself out.
I don't know how much an extra day would have helped. I do think the altitude did gas the players a little bit. Remember that Miami game last year when it was hotter than the seventh circle of hell? I said that had a pretty significant impact on the players. But I don't know how long it takes to get acclimated to a particular climate or altitude. As someone that despises hot weather, you could probably take me to Miami for a week and I'd still be miserable playing a football game. But I'm not a scientist, so I'm not exactly how much an extra 24 hours would have helped with them adjust to the altitude. That was going to be tough no matter what. But unlike Miami last year, the Bears were able to pull out a win in a rough climate. So regardless, it worked out. And now they're probably going to feel like world beaters when they go into a cool night air in Washington, D.C. on a Monday night. So, you know, football's an outside game. Elements affect the play on the field. It's been like that for 100 years. You're going to be sucking wind in the mountains. You're going to be tightening up in the Midwest winters. You're going to be frying in the South Florida climate. You might have to play through an earthquake in California. That's just how it is. The Bears were able to survive in advance.
So I can speak from personal experience. I was at that Miami game, and I was sweating that my jersey was sticking to me, and I could see, I remember Akeem Hicks at one point just fell forward. It was so hot there. But it's nice to see them pull a victory in that high altitude there, pull that
yeah,
out.
Yeah, it means so, a lot because if you're struggling in that, it's demoralizing enough. At least you can take a win out of it.
Exactly, which is something that they weren't able to do against Miami, so it's really nice to see them. I know it was hot in Denver, but not quite Miami hot.
Right.
So the other problem area for the Bears' offense appears to be the tight end position, the position that some say is instrumental to the Matt Nagy offense. Why is that so, and what's your assessment of the Bears' tight ends through two games? 55, Buffon, go.
Listen, the whole tight end core has 8 receptions for about 59 yards. Shaheen has 4 catches. Broniker has 2. Burton has 2, all for 5 yards, that should be noted. So if the tight end position is so important to this offense, they did a pretty shoddy job at sewing it up. I mean, Burton has been kind of a disappointment to this point. Shaheen is a disappointment up to this point. And then you have Broniker and a former lineman in Bradley Soule. So what are you going to do now? I mean, what's your plan of attack? You're going to go kick the tires on someone like Dwayne Allen, who got cut by, let me see here, the Dolphins? Although the Dolphins, if they got rid of him, he probably has some talent. But they did sign Burton to a $32 million deal. I hate putting on the cape and playing Captain Hindsight. fight because I really like that deal. I thought he was going to be great in Nagy's system, and he still might be. I'm not writing Burton off, but I believe they have a potential out in his contract after this year. I don't want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about the 2020 offseason. We're talking about the here and the now. They need to utilize Burton. They need to get Shaheen in there and need to see what these guys can do because next year could be a completely different looking cast.
I mean, we've seen what Burton can do in this offense when he's healthy. And I feel like the frustrating part is that he's not healthy again. Like, he started the season the same way he ended it. And even being out there for a few snaps, he just did not look like the Trey Burton that the Bears signed.
I mean, you can be the best player in the world. If you can only play 4, 5, 6 games out of the year, you're really not as valuable as most people think.
Absolutely. So Hub Arkish over at Pro Football Weekly wrote, 1 year ago, after blowing a 20-point lead at Green Bay, the Bears came home and put up just 271 yards of offense, 2 yards less than Sunday, and a 24-17 win over the Seahawks, dominated by the Bears' defense, as was Sunday. So his point is that there's no need to push the panic button about the effectiveness of this offense. Are you buying or are you selling? You know the routine. Go.
Okay, I'm going to buy it, but I'm looking for a coupon first. We shouldn't be comfortable with saying, well, they started slow last year, so they're going to have the same problems this year and everything's going to be fine. Listen, things are supposed to progress. I'm not a big fan of watching reruns. Every year, are we just supposed to expect things to suck offensively until they figure it out? Now, I don't disagree with what Arkush was saying at all. I think there is certainly potential that the offense could catch flight and we see an increase in productivity. And I'm just saying that we shouldn't be okay with that. Nagy is a very good offensive mind, and they're averaging 9.5 points per game so far. I'm going to be honest with you, that ain't gonna cut it in the NFL right now. I'm not mashing the panic button on the Bears by any stretch of the imagination, but I am kind of pressing on the WTF button. I mean, look at the offense. There's no reason for this. They have so many playmakers, and if they're gonna flip this magical switch at some point, they better do it soon. With that being said, I'm gonna welcome in Ian Cummings, writer for FanSided's Rig O'Rag. Ian, how you doing? Welcome to Buffon 55.
I'm doing great, John. I got to say, I'm loving the enthusiasm from you guys. I'm loving it.
And that's what we bring to the table. This is an hour of yelling, so we're happy to have you on here. Ian, you're the expert with the Redskins, so we want to know thy enemy. The first question I'm gonna ask you is, you know, besides writing about the Redskins, I understand that you are a fan. So tell me the mood amongst Redskins fans right now. So with the 0-2 start, was this expected? Is it disappointed, or are we on track? What's kind of the mindset within Redskins Nation right now?
Well, I'm like a half Lions, half Skins fan. I'm from Michigan, so that's kind of like a pit of sorrow right there.
But oh man,
I'm managing. But let me tell you, there's a few different subsets. There were some people who were really excited, kind of thinking of the best case scenario through the entire offseason, and that's fun. That's what the offseason's for, right? But eventually, you got to come back to reality, and the Redskins are pretty good at dragging people back to reality. Let me tell you, starting 0-2, I think a lot of people expected them not to be great. There's depth concerns across the roster, the coaching. You know, Jay Gruden, a lot of people thought he'd be fired after last year. A lot of people thought the defensive coordinator would be gone after last year. We'll get into that later. But they came back. A lot of people think they're lame ducks and just there's no culture. There's no established culture and schemes are inconsistent. And it's a recipe for not for disaster, but for mediocrity, which, as you see, you look at Gruden's resume. That's where he's been hovering for a long time. And, you know, with a roster that has some talent deficiencies and seriously important areas like the offensive line, like the secondary, that's something that's not going to fly. So I think the realists expected it. It is a bit of a disappointment, but I don't think anyone expected them to be world beaters.
You know, sometimes with a lame duck team, you know, you just see the defense giving up points on points and yards on yards. The Skins defense so far has allowed more than 30 points and 400 yards per game. Coming into the season, I mean, there were higher hopes for the Washington defense. What's the root of the poor play on the offensive side of the ball or the defensive side of the ball right now?
Yeah, there were high hopes. I mean, even the realists had some high hopes. I mean, because you got Montez Sweat coming in, you know, super athlete. You got a really good defensive line. They've invested 2 first-round picks, DeRon Payne, Jonathan Allen. You got Josh Norman, Quentin Dunbar, Fabian Moreau, Monte Nicholson, Landon Collins. The secondary was never going to be great, but, you know, there's some experience there. They thought maybe some established presences would help out. And even the linebacking core, I mean, fifth-round pick Cole Holcomb, he took the starting job pretty quickly, and there were some high hopes around him. But basically, it's been a mix of things. I can't sit here and tell you it's one specific thing. There have been injuries. Jonathan Allen has been out. He was out last week, and that hurt them. You know, still chemistry issues, a lot of communication lapses in the secondary. I know that led to one of the deep touchdowns in the first 2 weeks. I think the one to Devin Smith, the Cowboys receiver, Monte Nicholson and Josh Norman had some communication issues. John Bostic, some coverage issues in the linebacking core. So consistency is an issue. Greg Minuski, the defensive coordinator, he's not very good at adapting, which in today's game, you got to be adaptable as a defensive coordinator because you're getting all these different looks from offenses and just not really adapting, not really planning on the fly. And it's predictable, and offenses kind of take advantage of that. So it's a lot of different things. The talent has been kind of sapped away by injuries, and then the coaching isn't great to begin with. It's not a recipe for success.
I heard a John Bostic reference. Some Chicago Bears fans love hearing about that guy. We are talking to Ian Cummings, writing for Fanside. It's Riggo Rag. Ian, staying on the defensive side of the ball, head coach Jay Gruden says the defense is playing vanilla. Can you kind of help us understand the context of that a little bit? It kind of sounds like he's taking a shot at his D coordinator.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you would be correct in that assumption. Now, some people like vanilla ice cream. I love vanilla ice cream. It might be weird, but I love it.
It's delicious. I'll give you that.
Yeah, exactly. You know, some keep it simple, right? But right. In the context of football, that's not what you want to do. I mean, in today's game, you need to be adaptable. Like I said in the previous question, getting all these different looks, you need to be able to mend your scheme to your players. You can't mend your players to your scheme. You know, you can't be stringent like that. And Minuski, he doesn't really change much. He blitzes at inopportune times, you know, not really changing the looks and, you know, creating mismatches for the offense, cultivating that. And those were problems we saw from him last year, not really using the defense and the players to their strengths. And that was one thing that made a lot of people think that they were going to move on from him. They actually, like, publicly had a defensive coordinator search while Minuski was still the defensive coordinator, and no one wanted to come here. So they had to keep him. And now it's like, you know, he's kind of a lame duck, and he's not really fighting for his job right now. I can tell you that right now. It's just not a lot of adjustments, not a lot of flexibility. Offenses are taking advantage of that, putting them in tough situations. And if they don't fix it, you know, there's going to be a change made. But you don't know if there's going to be improvement there, because you can really only pick from inside candidates. And they have Rob Ryan, who has a very bad track record as a defensive coordinator. So they're kind of backed into a corner. They got to live with what they have. And Minuski is he's just not doing it.
You know, one of the bigger names on that defense, Josh Norman, I mean, an expensive free agent pickup for Washington, a lot of excitement whenever he went to Washington. But is it fair to say that he hasn't lived up to that deal? It seems like he's being a little, I don't want to say combative, but maybe argumentative with the media every once in a while. What's the deal with Josh Norman as far as on and off the field?
Yeah, you know, Josh Norman, I wouldn't say he's lived up to the deal. It's a massive deal that he got. I will say, you know, in the earlier years, he was still one of the better corners in football. You could say that. He was producing. He was generating turnovers. You could say that. Now, it seems like he is regressing a little bit. I think in a certain niche, he can be good. He's really good when he can sit back a little bit, make the reads, cut down on routes. But in man-to-man coverage against fast receivers, which a lot of offenses have been matching him up with fast receivers, creating separation, it doesn't make Norman look good, because he's never been the fast, speedy corner who can stick to guys. You know, he's one of those guys who can make reads. He's physical. He's long. And, you know, part of that is Minuski not using him the right way. But at the same time, you know, Norman just he's getting up there. The traditional cutoff point for corners is, I think, 30 years old. Usually you see them kind of regress after that. I think we're starting to see that from Norman. And at this point, the contract value is minimal from his performance. So I don't expect it to get any better. I can tell you that right now. But if they could maybe change up how they use him and put him in more zone where he can kind of sit back, read throws, and cut down on those slants and things like that, and comeback routes, and really use his physicality. But in those man-to-man situations, it's a recipe for disaster. And I think that's what we've seen. As far as the media goes, I think he was angry that his comments about Dak Prescott specifically last week got taken out of context. He was saying, you know, people were saying, what do you think about Prescott, his perfect passer rating week one? He's like, oh, anyone can do that. And what he meant, I think, was, you know, anyone can have a great game like that when they're not being pressured, which that when they have great protection, which no disrespect to Prescott, you know, had an amazing game. But the notion is not incorrect, but I do think he does tend to get a little carried away with the media, tends to say things and doesn't really understand how, you know, people can take it out of context and it can come back to bite you. He's always been kind of that media personality. You know, you're not going to change that about Josh Norman, but this in this stage of his career where he's getting exposed a little bit more, it's a slippery slope.
We're talking to Ian Cummings, writer for Fanside. It's Riggo Rag. Ian, a guy that's on the other side of 30, the better side of 30 in football, would be first-round pick, 26th overall, Montez Sweat. So far, 9 tackles, 2 of those for a loss. No sacks as of yet, but coming out of college, he really impressed scouts with some of his physical skills. What's the buzz about Sweat going around Washington right now?
Yeah, he's almost on the better side of 20, almost. Yeah. Not quite. Yeah, he's I'll tell you what, I was team Brian Burns coming out in terms of the edge rushers in the draft, but I liked Montez Sweat. You know, 6'6", 260, impressive length, very impressive length, and he ran a 4.4 in the combine, which straight line speed is not that important for defensive linemen, but it's a testament to his athletic ability. So needless to say, they trade up to get him in the first round. Expectations are very high, and I wouldn't say he's met them yet. He definitely hasn't provided that disruptive presence as a pass rusher. I mean, this team's been looking for a guy to complement Ryan Kerrigan for so long, and now Kerrigan, he's on the other side of 30. He's starting to kind of go on that downward slope. Time is running out. I think that made people want Sweat to get off to a quicker start, and with the interior line, you know, an imposing line, they really put a big investment into it. It had high expectations as well. I think people thought that it would just all come together. And it hasn't, which is fine. You know, Sweat's a young guy. He's coming in. He's raw. He's still got to get the nuances of the game down. And I'm not going to overreact to the slow start. Some people in the Redskins fan base are. You know, people are saying, oh, he's a bust already. No, it's not quite that bad. But he does need to kind of learn how to use his hands a little better to work and gain leverage against NFL offensive linemen, because these linemen, they've been in the game longer. You know, they know how to manipulate that leverage and manipulate those pressure points. And Sweat, he's just not quite there yet. But he's got all the traits. I expect it to come together. If not, you know, later this year, you know, maybe next year. But he's definitely got the upside. I wouldn't be too concerned about the slow start. But for a team that wanted to win now, even if they weren't ready to win now, they weren't ready to accept that, it is a little bit of a dampener.
I want to switch sides of the ball. After they lost to the Cowboys, you wrote that the Redskins offense isn't good enough to win modern football. That kind of intrigues me. What do you mean by that? Why are they not good? Why is the offense not good enough to win at modern football?
Yeah, it's a number of things. Kind of like the defensive answer. You got to be adaptable. But it's not defense. It's kind of a reactionary adaptable. Offense is kind of like you got to be able to put pressure on defenses in multiple ways. You got to have offensive balance, which that doesn't mean 50 run plays, 50 pass plays. That means getting the ball to your playmakers an equal amount, equitable. And you know, you got to always keep the foot on. You got to keep the foot on the gas pedal. And Jay Gruden, you know, credit to him, he's a really good at scheming plays, particularly pass plays. You know, he'll scheme guys open, but his game flow. You know, he gets out to a lead and then he just sits on it. You know, and three and out, because, you know, they're trying to establish the run, but in actuality, trying to establish the run kind of creates an inefficiency for your offense, because running plays are inherently less efficient, you know, and with a bad run blocking line, which the Redskins offensive line is pretty bad at run blocking so far this season, that's just going to get you in a hole. That's what happened with the Eagles. They were up, I think, 21-7 at one point. And then they just sat on that lead, and the Eagles scored 32 straight points, and it was not even close. And then against the Cowboys, they got out to a 7-0 lead. Gruden's like, all right, I can play ball control. But really what's happening is, you know, you're conceding those long drives because you're sapping efficiency away from your offense by trying to establish an identity as a running game. And then it's giving more opportunities to the other team. So you've always got to keep the foot on the gas. You got to take those shots. You got to scheme guys open. I think the league is moving to more of a passing league, We saw that with the Bears breakout last season. You know, they were kind of implementing more of those concepts. Matt Nagy was. Jay Gruden knows how to scheme guys open, but the game flow is not up to the standards in modern football. And I think that's one of the downfalls for this offense. And I don't see it changing anytime soon because old dogs, frankly, don't learn new tricks.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see if that progresses or if it regresses, because we always say if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards. So I want to stay on the offensive side of the ball. Our draft analyst, Danny Shimon, was gushing over Terry McLaurin down at the Senior Bowl. He said his production at Ohio State was hindered by the amount of talent the Buckeyes had on their roster. But it was clear to Danny that McLaurin had the skills to play at a high level. And as usual, Danny appears to be correct on this one. Can you tell us a little bit about the buzz on this young wide receiver?
Yeah. It's I would say Danny made the right call there. I think that McLaurin, he came in, there wasn't a lot of hype around him. Most of the appeal was he's a high character guy. He can play special teams very well. And I think, the Redskins, when they were evaluating him, they kind of thought about, hey, he's a high character guy who can kind of fulfill a multitude of needs. Then they get him in the practices and stuff, and they're like, man, this guy's got legit 4.35 speed. He's tough. He's got a compact frame. He can be a complete number one receiver. And, he's come out. His attention to detail is striking with his routes. Very good route nuance. And he's got the speed, as we saw in week one, to break away and be that deep threat too. So a really complete threat. And a part of his breakout has also been the situation of the Redskins receiving core. You won't find a bigger Trey Quinn fan than I am. There was a really weird phase last offseason where people started making Chuck Norris jokes for Trey Quinn. I don't know why, but he reached cult fandom status. And he's got the long flowing locks, but I'll be the first to concede the Redskins receiving core was not proven at all. I think one of the most unproven cores in the NFL. So, there's opportunity for someone to break out if they have the traits, and I think that's what we've seen with McLaurin. I wrote an article a couple weeks ago that he's a must-buy fantasy asset, and I think I can rest on my laurels with that one. I drafted him in like the 15th round, and he's my starter now. So it's really a combination of his own traits and the situation, but it's really amalgamated for him to break out and take that premier role, and he's running with it.
Definitely appears to be a fantasy steal this season. We're talking to Ian Cummings, writer for FanSided's Rigorag. Let's go to a guy that's not so young, one of the ageless wonders in the league, Adrian Peterson. He's rushed for almost 1,600 yards and scored 14 touchdowns in 14 games. I mean, to put this mildly, he's kind of hurt the Bears in the past. I'm trying to say that without my heart exploding. But what has to happen for Peterson to complement those stats next Monday night against the current Bears roster with Peterson and his current mid-30s body?
Well, I'll tell you what, Bears fans out there, if you're out there watching Adrian Peterson highlights to prepare, to prepare yourself for sorrow or whatever, don't worry. He's not the same guy that he was back when he was in the NFC North team. He's still got the physicality. He's still got the vision. He's not as spry, he's not as quick as he used to be. But he does bring some utility. I think for him to bring those doomsday days back to the Bears, I think he needs to, you got to have a good day from the offensive line, run blocking. That's something they haven't gotten yet. I don't expect things to change substantially over the course of 1 week, but hey, you never know. I think maybe Peterson it'll ignite a fire for him to go up against a team that was a former rival for him. So we'll see. But traits-wise, he's not the same guy he was, but he is still a legitimate threat in a sense. I wouldn't say he can create for himself as well as he used to. Just when you get older, I mean, running backs just inherently, they have a shorter shelf life. Adrian Peterson is kind of an outlier. He's kind of pulling a Frank Gore. I don't think anyone expected him to do that, but he's out there. He's still kicking. But I think the Redskins offensive line really needs to help him out, because last week, his first start after he was benched in week one, a lot of commotion around that, but he gets the start, and I think he had 10 carries for 25 yards. And what I said earlier, they tried to predicate the offense on him for like a little bit, and it did not work. He couldn't really find space consistently. I think if the blocking doesn't improve, that's what you're going to see, especially against a really menacing Bears front. So we'll see. But I'm not optimistic about that. I think you guys will be fine. You can sleep well at night.
That is comforting, and I appreciate those sentiments. I want to talk about another guy that's been hanging around the NFL for a while, Case Keenum. His numbers really aren't that bad, but one thing that we know about Case Keenum is sometimes his stats can be deceiving. Can you give us kind of a behind-the-curtain look at Case? What's really going on? What's the feeling about him in Washington?
Yeah, I'll say you're correct. His stats have been deceiving. I was a big proponent of starting Dwayne Haskins right off the bat. I thought he would have benefited from that experience. And I thought he was ready, too. He was nearing readiness. And, you know, the best way to make a rookie quarterback learn is to give him those live reps. But they started Keenum, which is fine. They thought they could win with him. But Keenum's been efficient. He's been kind of efficient. You know, he's kind of an average quarterback. You know, I wouldn't say he's quite at the level he was with the Vikings. But a lot of people like to pull out that year and say, like, hey, you can win with Case Keenum. You need, like, a perfect team to win with Case Keenum. And the Redskins don't have a perfect team. And a lot of his stats have been in garbage time. You know, in week one, they kind of got off to a fast start. And Keenum was really pushing the envelope. You know, he was hitting guys downfield. We saw a little bit more of his inconsistency later on. You know, he missed a wide-open deep shot to McLaurin. And then in week two against the Cowboys, just couldn't get a rhythm. You know, Keenum is a really workmanlike quarterback. You know, he just knows what the right thing to do is. But as far as his traits are concerned, he doesn't really have the arm strength to fit in those tight windows when he needs to. You know, he's kind of limited in a sense. And I think he's a good spot starter. You know, but at the end of the day, he's not going to lead you to wins. And he's not, for the Redskins specifically, if they fall behind, if they get a deficit, he's not the guy to bring you back from that. And I think if that happens against the Bears, you know, it'll be pretty easy to kind of cap that lead and just kind of limit Case Keenum and contain him, you know, because the stats are pretty, but stats don't tell the whole story at the end of the day. You know, he's been serviceable, but if your team is looking to win, he's not going to do that for you.
Let's go to the tight end position, because if there's one thing that Bears fans love to kind of bitch about, it's like it's sub-adequate tight end play. Any news on tight end Jordan Reed, who's been out the last 2 weeks with a concussion, and Vernon Davis? I mean, he kind of had that splash play to open the season. Has he been able to pick up the slack?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's been weird, man. It's been weird. Coming out of week three was when it started. Jordan Reed, he had a healthy offseason. And then week three, he suffered a concussion. And, you know, Jay Gruden came out. He's like, I am confident that he can play in week one. He didn't play in week one. And then he didn't play in week two. So, well, we don't really know what's going on there. But I would hope, because if Gruden was optimistic, you know, just looking at it in a vacuum, if Gruden was optimistic that he was going to play in week one and he still hasn't suited up yet, you know, it opens up a few questions. You know, has he regressed a little bit, or is he almost guaranteed to play now because he's had more time to recover? I don't know. There hasn't really been an update there. So he was questionable for most of last week. He ended up not suiting up. So I would say things are trending in the right direction there. But given the performance that Vernon Davis has been, you know, amounting early, I wouldn't say they think it's a necessity to play Reed. That said, Vernon Davis, that splash play, man, that was exciting, let me tell you. You don't normally see guys that old in the NFL hurdle guys on the sideline and then take it to the house. That was a much-needed high point in that first game. But Davis is still kicking, too. I mean, we talk about Adrian Peterson. This Redskins team has a lot of veterans that are still kind of prolonging their careers. They're very productive careers and prolific. And he's been exactly what they need from that role. You know, he can fill in and fulfill that role pretty nicely. But he's not, at the end of the day, he's not Jordan Reed. He can't get that separation over the middle as well. And drops have kind of plagued him in the past too. So it's going to be a little bit of a downgrade. I don't think the reliability is quite there for either of those guys in the capacity that you want it to be. If Reed comes in, it'll at least give him some versatility. Maybe they can use more two tight end sets. If he doesn't, it's really, I wish I could give you a concrete answer. I wish I could give you guys for sure, you know, he is going to play or he's not, so you know what to expect. But things are kind of cloudy right now in Ashburn. So I'll get back to you on that. But I don't know.
But between Davis and Adrian Peterson, you guys are fielding a hell of a 2009 Pro Bowl team. I do want to talk about Trent Williams. Former defensive back D'Angelo Hall recently said Trent Williams could return to the team sooner rather than later. Is sooner, could that potentially even mean this week for, you know, Monday night's game?
I would say no. I would say no there. It's been a weird saga too. The Redskins are just full of surprises, man. Let me tell you. And surprises are just straight up, you don't know what you're expecting. It's weird. But yeah, a couple weeks ago, D'Angelo Hall, he was on a podcast. Well, first off, a couple weeks before that, he was like, Trent Williams is definitely not coming back this week. That was in preseason. Then a couple of weeks later, he said, yeah, he could come back sooner rather than later. And then Trent Williams was actually spotted in the D.C. area, I think, before week one. I think it was before week one. And then he was on his Instagram story. People really vet this stuff, man. I'm not very emphatic about it. But some people, man, they follow it this step for step. And his Instagram story, I think on it, it was like he was somewhere near the desert or whatever. So he's just off doing his own thing. I don't expect him to be back for week three. I know he has to be back, I think, before week 10 so that he can accrue a full season and not forfeit those salary bonuses. So I think that's the latest we'll see him, but I don't expect him to see him week three. I feel like we would have seen a little more momentum on that front at this point. And you know, it's almost Wednesday. We haven't heard anything. I wouldn't expect it to be something to just jump out, you know? And also, you know, you've got injuries. You got the Patriots, their tackle went down. You've got, I think, the 49ers, their tackle went down. So maybe trade talks could be in the works there. I don't know. That's also a possibility. But as far as Williams suiting up and providing that help for the Redskins offensive line in week three against the Bears, I would say that's a no-go.
All right, one last question for me before I throw you to the hyenas in the chat room here. On special teams, Dustin Hopkins, pretty reliable veteran, hitting over 85% of his kicks. Anything of note to report on the Redskins special teams? Any exciting, explosive plays, reliability, as exciting as special teams can be? Anything worth of note?
Now we've got no double doinks over here. We're pretty peaceful.
That's never going to stop.
I had to do it.
I understand.
But, yeah, if you want to talk about exciting guys, I guess Tress Way, you know, he's a Redskins fans love to pull the card. He's the best punter in the league. I mean, that's all we got, man. We got to take the wins where we can get, you know. We got the best punter in the league over here. But Tress Way has been good, downing a lot of punts inside the 20. I would say he could be a problem for that Bears offense if I'm being honest, you know. You don't normally hear that, but, you know, downing punts inside the 20, and for the Bears offense that's kind of struggled to gain momentum this season, that could be tough, trying to start drives that far back. Dustin Hopkins has been good, too. He's been consistent. Nothing really bad to report on that front. That's if there's one area of Redskins football that's consistent, it's the special teams group, which it's kind of ironic because that's the – you know, ultimately, it's important, but it's ultimately the least important on the grand scheme of things. But they've been good there. Nothing to complain about.
I'm not going to discount the value of a good punter, given the fact that if the Bears offense has a lot of long fields, that's not exactly a great scenario for a sputtering offense. So that is something of note. Alyssa, I know you've been interacting with our Mixler chat room about, you know, football and The Bachelor, which we're going to have a talk about in a little bit. But any questions from our friends and for Ian about this coming game?
Yes, I have three questions. Hi, Ian. How you doing?
Doing good.
So we were talking about this in the chat room a little bit. Why are the Redskins 0-2?
They're very blanket.
That's a loaded question. I would say they haven't, you know, I don't want to give them credit because ultimately if you're losing, you're doing something wrong. But they have had a tough slate. You know, you play the Philadelphia Eagles, who were a playoff favorite in week one. That was rough. And they had a lead for some of that game, give them credit. And then week two, you play the Cowboys, who, with Kellen Moore as their offensive coordinator, man, the Cowboys are rejuvenated. They look like a serious, legit Super Bowl threat almost. You know, I would say that defense is very good. Dak Prescott playing out of his mind. So they're a very good team. They got a tough draw for the first two games. That said, you know, these two truths can coincide. The Redskins have had a tough slate, and the Redskins have been bad. they've been sloppy. Penalties killed them. You know, the coaching, like I said earlier, on defense, very bland, very vanilla, not adjusting to offenses when they need to, and they're creating mismatches on their own. And on offense, you know, they're sitting on leads and they're killing the momentum that they gain early on. And by the time they try and recover and get those and dial up those shot plays, it's too late. And then just personnel wise, there's been some inconsistency too. Like I said, Case Keenum, he's not going to bring you back from a deficit, you know, once you're behind. And, you know, the offensive line has been a little inconsistent too. And yeah, it's just personnel, coaching, opponents. It's been a mix of things. And I think a lot of people expected them to be 0-2. So it's not a huge surprise. It's just a disappointing in the way that it happened. Because for a while in week one, it looked like a win was in reach and they kind of let it slip through their fingers. But in actuality, I think this team is what the record says they are. They're just not that good coaching and personnel-wise.
And so Marin has a good point. She wants to know, how is Case Keenum going to adjust with Khalil Mack coming at him?
Oh boy. I don't know if he is, man. Khalil Mack is he's a terror. He is a terror. Yeah, Case Keenum does not do well under pressure. I think that's one of his big things. And going up against Donald Penn will be a task. Donald Penn he's actually been okay at tackle, but he's old. He's not mobile. I think Khalil Mack will get the best of that matchup quite often, and it's going to be tough for Keenum. We've seen Keenum in the first couple weeks when he was impacted by pressure, he would force throws a little bit. He would rush it. He hasn't thrown a pick yet, but in week two, particularly against the Cowboys, there was one play, I think, where Antoine Woods, the interior defensive lineman, got pressure really quickly. Keenum tried to force a pass on a slant, threw it right to the safety who dropped it. And, you know, Keenum doesn't have the arm strength, like I said, to kind of force it in there really quickly and make those precision throws. And so that's going to lead to opportunities for defensive backs. You know, ultimately, if Matt can get quick pressure, it's going to make Keenum more volatile, you know, exactly what you don't want Keenum to become. And it's going to lead to mistakes. And I think, you know, the offensive line really needs to come to play, because that Bears defensive line, Akeem Hicks, Khalil Mack, Roy Robertson-Harris, that is not a pushover group. You know, they're going to bring the fight early. They're going to bring the fight hard. And I think Keenum will, you know, his play will suffer if they get through.
So if the Bears offense runs the ball, how many rushing yards do you think that they're going to get?
Well, I hope they get a lot, because I got David Montgomery on my fantasy team. But I'm not sure. You know, I think a lot of it depends on if Jonathan Allen is back. He's been dealing with an injury for a little bit, and if he can come back, he's a big force on that defensive line. Just a very versatile guy. He can stop the run. He can rush the passer. Deron Payne's doing good too. I think Cole Holcomb's been good. I would say though, the Bears' offensive line, man, that's a really good unit. You know, you got Cody Whitehair. I'm blanking on the other names, but you guys know them. It's a good group, and I think it'll be a tough fight. A lot of it depends on if Allen is back, because if he's back, it increases the depth of the defensive line and the fortitude as well. But I would say, well, okay, if I want to go through the entire game right now, I would assume the Redskins fall behind. I would assume they fall more behind. And then I think the Bears can accumulate some rushing yards. I think Montgomery has a chance to eclipse 100 yards. We'll see. We'll see. And this defense is prone to big plays, too, once in a while. So you might see one of those breakthrough. I think he does have a chance to break 100. So if that was for fantasy purposes, you know, I would say it's not a bad bet.
I know Bears fans look forward to that. I got one last question for you. So during the Fox broadcast on Sunday, Gruden said that Adrian Peterson is a north-to-south runner, which is why he struggled in this offense. But then on Monday, he said that having a north-to-south runner is good. Do you know, is there some kind of rift between AP and Gruden? Because he didn't even dress for that first game.
You know, that's you can never see inside the locker room. I really wish we could, because that would make for some great reality TV, let me tell you. But I think I feel like I can't speak to whether there is or isn't a rift, but it does seem like Jay Gruden is hesitant to commit to AP as his go-to guy. And like I said earlier, you know, Adrian Peterson at this stage of his career, he's always been kind of that old era back. You know, he brings the physicality, but he's not super versatile. You know, you can't really get him consistent looks in the passing game, you know, and you can't really change alignments with him in there. He's kind of a north-south back, but he does have the ability to kind of hop around a little bit and kind of show you he's still got some juice. But at the end of the day, he's not as versatile. And I do think that's one reason Gruden kind of wants other guys in there. I know he's brought in Wendell Smallwood, who's a little more versatile. Chris Thompson, who's a third down back, kind of like our Tariq Cohen, a much lesser version of Tariq Cohen. He values versatility from his running backs, for better or worse. You know, Peterson is a guy with a lot of yards behind his, you know, to prop him up, his status. But ultimately, I think his rushing style is inefficient, and I think that's what Gruden's getting at. I do think there is a little bit of a rift, if not between Gruden and Peterson, then between Gruden and the players, because I know Morgan Moses, the team's right tackle, he literally came out after week one and said it's a slap in the face to bench Adrian Peterson. So you see, Peterson is a guy with a lot of respect among his peers. And to bench him, Peterson's been pretty professional about it. He said, you know, I'm going to do whatever they ask me to do. So I don't think there's necessarily a rift there. But there is some confusion as to what Gruden wants to do and what he's able to do. And ultimately, you know, how it impacts the locker room, because culture is volatile. Let me tell you, it's fragile. And it doesn't take much to kind of throw it awry. And I think that's a little bit of what we're seeing with the Redskins. I think that impacted them in week one. You can't speak to how much it impacted them. I don't think it was like the reason they lost, but every little thing contributes to just a little bit more dysfunction. And it can be the thing that throws your season in the tank. And I think that's what we're seeing, if not between Peterson and Gruden, then between Gruden and the rest of the team, kind of losing faith.
Excellent, Ian. Well, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. Please tell our audience where they can find your work and interact with you on social media.
Yeah. So Rigo's Rag, it's a fan-sided Washington Redskins site. If you want to hit me up on Twitter, ask me some more questions, it is @Ian_Cummings_9. Straight up, Ian Cummings 9 was taken, so I had to improvise a little bit. But you know how it is. So that's where you can find me. And Rigo's Rag, I think it's just @Rigo's Rag, if you want to see some of our content. So
Twitter is a strange beast. That's Ian Cummings, writer for Fansided's Rigo Rag. Ian, thank you so much for being on Buffone 55. We'll talk to you down the road.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right. We're going into the second half.
So, John, that music signifies one thing. It's time for the second half of our Buffone 55 questions. So I just want to say I've been conditioned to be, like, fearful of Adrian Peterson anytime he's playing the Bears, but I am reminding myself that this isn't the same Adrian Peterson and this isn't the same Bears defense. So I'm hoping that Monday night goes a lot better than it has in the past.
Yeah, I still have some PTSD from Adrian Peterson, so I it's going to be hard not to just assume he's going to break off a 70-yard run at some point.
And if he did, it probably would be against the Bears.
So exactly, yeah.
I'm knocking on wood. Okay, so let's get to our next set of questions, John. And while we traditionally do five, I'd like to go to OT here, so be prepared.
Okay.
So do you think that this week's opponent represents an opportunity for Nagy to open the playbook up a little bit for Mitch? Meaning have him throw more passes to a wide receiver group that's yearning to be involved in this pass game? Or should Nagy, should the emphasis be on the running game? You have 55 seconds. Starts now.
Listen, I don't care if they're playing the Washington Redskins or the 2000 Ravens. The offense needs to take the training wheels off. Having a V8 engine means nothing if only two cylinders are firing. Why have Allen Robinson, Taylor Gabriel, Anthony Miller, Tariq Cohen, and the rest? The way they're playing isn't working. You got to throw the ball to wide receivers. Get everyone involved. Running the ball is great, and they tried to establish that more against the Broncos. Montgomery got the ball 18 times, scored a touchdown. I'm not saying they should abandon the running game, but when you have to pass the ball, everyone should be an option, not just a jump ball to Robinson or a swing pass to Cohen. Don't get me wrong. I don't think Mitch should pass the ball 50 times a game either. I don't think that they should go that route. I think they need to find that balance. Now, excuse me if I sound a little irritated, but I get frustrated when I don't understand what the problem is, and it's kind of where I am right now. I don't know why this isn't working. I don't know why the receivers aren't getting involved. I don't know why Mitch looks like he regressed. I don't know why the play calling appears suspect. I don't have the answer, but the staff better find the answer fast.
And I feel like if there's any opportunity for Mitch to finally get on track in this offense in general, it's against this 30th ranked Redskins defense. So let's hope that they finally kick it into gear.
Now's the time.
This is exactly the time. So the Bears finally got their first turnover on Sunday, the Kyle Fuller interception. Last season, the Bears led the NFL in interceptions and were third in turnover differential. Do the Bears have to match those kind of stats to be a playoff team in 2019? You've got 55 ticks.
Well, that would be nice, wouldn't it? I'm not going to go set an arbitrary number for the defense to get because it's highly dependent on the efficiency of the offense. If the offense gets jump-started and pulls its weight, it takes the pressure off the defense to constantly make plays and get interceptions and cause fumbles and turnovers. If the offense keeps running like a 65 Chevy Corvair, the defense is going to need a spectacular performance after another spectacular performance. But as well as the defense has played, I do think they're going to see an increase in turnovers. We saw Fuller pick off Flacco. Week one, we know it's hard to get Aaron Rodgers to turn the ball over. The next 4 weeks, they face off against Case Keenum, Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr, and since Drew Brees probably won't be ready to go by October 20th, they're probably going to get Teddy Bridgewater when they play the Saints. There should be some opportunities there to turn the ball over. But to answer the original question, whether they need that turnover differential, I think that depends on whether or not the offense gives them a little more support.
Agreed. And like you're, I mean, the Bears defense, they're going to have an off game. It's going to happen eventually. So that's when you're going to need your offense to step it up. We've seen the defense step it up for them countless times. So hopefully the offense can get it together so that the defense doesn't have to be perfect every game.
Fully agree.
So Anthony Miller, the receiver that Ryan Pace traded back into the second round in 2018 to acquire, he's been virtually non-existent in this offense in the first two games. Is there a problem here, or is his slow start reasonable given the offseason surgery he had? 55 seconds? Go ahead.
Well, he got one damn target last game, and he caught it. So now, if you want to say he's not getting separation, that's one thing. But we just talked about Trubisky not getting his receivers involved, with the exception of maybe Allen Robinson. So is this an Anthony Miller thing, or is it a Mitchell Trubisky thing? It's not like Taylor Gabriel is being aggressively targeted in the passing game, or Javon Wims, or anyone else. If Miller is the third or second read on plays, have we really seen Trubisky go through the full progression to try to get those reads the ball? It is possible that Miller is rusty and not 100%, maybe, but he hasn't exactly had an opportunity to go make big plays. If the ball's only thrown to you once a game, how are you supposed to flash any of your playmaking ability? Miller is just another casualty of this slow offensive start for the Bears, and as the offense improves from the top down, hopefully, you're going to see more productivity from the likes of Anthony Miller and others. I love Anthony Miller. I still have confidence in his ability, and I'm excited to see what he can do in the future, but everyone's in a rut right now, and he can be part of that turnaround.
And it feels like the only receiver that exists right now is Allen Robinson. Mitch is going to have to be able to spread the ball around. That's what you should be able to do in this offense, and Anthony Miller is that kind of target. We're so excited for what he's going to do this year, but he hasn't been given that opportunity to show that. So hopefully this Redskins game will be an opportunity to do just that.
Let's hope.
So given what you've learned about the Redskins, thanks to our guest, Ian, what concerns you about the Bears' upcoming opponents? The clock starts now.
I always look at matchups like this where the Bears are, for all intents and purposes, the better team. And I think, what could even the playing field in this game? Turnovers and letting up big plays on defense. Well, the turnovers are going to be on the Bears' offense to control. So I'm thinking the big plays. I'm going to reference last year's Miami game again. Remember Albert Wilson torching the Bears on quick passes? Brock frickin' Osweiler tossing for 380 yards. Brock Osweiler. The ageless Frank Gore ripped off some huge runs and had over 100 yards on the day. So I look at this Washington team, and I watched a good amount of their game with Dallas, and I see this kid, Terry McLaurin, burning people. Should have had another long touchdown, but Case Keenum missed him. Averaged 12.4 yards per catch. He hauled in one touchdown. They do have some young playmakers. I thought Trey Quinn played well. Chris Thompson is still there and can get things done running and catching the ball. I want to make sure that Washington doesn't hit on any of these quick strike points, because nothing makes a team believe they can win the game quite like pulling off a big play and scoring 7 points in a matter of 5 seconds. So limit the home runs, make the less talented team attempt to nickel and dime you. I think that's what the Bears have to do.
Now I'm having flashbacks on Miami game, and now I'm really hoping that is
yes.
not the case on Monday night.
It was terrible. Albert Wilson, over, I think, 200 yards receiving or something like that, close to that, two touchdowns.
I still remember before the game, I was like, Brock Osweiler, there's no way. They're going to Bears by 50. And then that ensued.
They got lit up by the Brock Lobster. Yeah.
The Brock Lobster. Awesome. So, although I deliberated over who you should deliver your weekly pep talk to. And I convinced him that it's the offensive line. Yes, they played much better in week two, but I still expect more consistency out of them. So they need the Buffon boost. I've turned off the clock. Take it away.
Hey, fellas. Not a bad performance last week, but as you all know, things could probably be better. Now, I know you guys are used to being the unheralded heroes. When something goes right, it's the quarterback that gets the praise. However, the spotlight is staying on your quarterback now when things aren't so good. Yeah, people are commenting on your shortcomings as well, but they aren't talking about kicking you out of town right now, at least not yet. Your quarterback is taking a beating on and off the field. He's struggling and he needs your help. Success starts with you. So we need you to turn into a bunch of snarling, crazed dogs and destroy whoever is dumb enough to stand in front of you. Inevitably, when the offense begins to improve, your quarterback will be congratulated. He will be the talk of the town. But you can take solace in knowing that you were the catalyst for that success. You will know it, I will know it, and the barroom will know it. So get out there and put someone in the ground. Now is the time. With that being said, every week I like to give my prediction for the Bears game. Right now I'm 1-1, just like them. So I'm kind of forecasting a better offensive game. I think the Bears get up by two possessions at some point, and they're able to suffocate the game away. Last week I predicted they would score 20 points. They did not. I think they get there this week, and they beat the Washington Redskins by a score of 23-13. Bears win. Remember to follow me on Twitter at JD Buffon. Make sure you are following the Barroom on Twitter at Bears Barroom and on the Facebook page. I want to thank Ian Cummings, writer for Fansided's Riggo Rag, again for being my guest tonight. Alyssa, can you tell our listeners where they can find your work and contact you on social media?
You can find my work over at BearsWire.com and on Twitter at Alyssa Barbieri. And I also want to tell those listening to us live on Mixler.com that in just a few minutes, we've got two more shows coming up. Fantasy Football Goon with Joe Mandel, who is known as Joey Two Scoops, and John Santucci, a.k.a. The Tooch. They will welcome Fantasy Football Legends Spaceball, and the three will get you prepped for week three. That's followed by Shy Fans in the Stands with Greg Braggs and Joey Two Scoops. Their guest tonight?
I don't know.
Oh, we don't know their guest.
You got to tune in to find out.
It's going to be good.
You got to tune in to find out. It's a mystery guest.
It'll be a mystery guest. There you go. So make sure you're tuning in for that. And those two shows, along with this one, will be available on podcast format. So make sure you subscribe to the Bears Barroom Radio Network.
That's right, and sign up on Mixlr.com for email updates and all of our live shows. We'd love to have you in our chat room. And remember, it's all absolutely free to sign up for. We hope you join us live and interact with us. And if you listen to the podcast, please leave us a review. That helps us immensely. But that'll do it for us tonight on Buffon 55. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time, Barflies.